that point, or that point is actually expressly discussed in the previous chapter, as well as in the first chapter, first paragraph of chapter 5. And that point is very, very simple. That bhakti cannot come to the heart if the heart is full of material desires, and especially the desire for mukti, or liberation, merging with the Supreme. So to help us in our task to remove especially the desire for mukti from within our heart, Rupa Goswami has put these 27 verses in a row, even though in the last chapter there were 3 or 4 verses explaining the same thing, just to make sure that we clearly understand the point. He's put these verses in a row. The chapter begins, "How much a devotee is seriously attached to the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be understood from the statements of Maharaj Prithu Ariraj, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 20th chapter, verse 24. He prays to the Supreme Personality of Godhead thus, 'My dear Lord, after taking liberation, I have no chance to hear of the glories of your Lordship, glories chanted by pure devotees from the core of their hearts in praise of your lotus feet. And if I have no chance for this honey of transcendental bliss, then I shall never ask for liberation or this so-called spiritual emancipation. I shall simply always pray unto your Lordship that you may give me millions of tongues and millions of ears so that I can constantly chant and hear of your transcendental glories.'" So Rupa Goswami has put this in, this actual verse, because the sweetness that a devotee experiences hearing and chanting in the association of pure and advanced devotees is so great that it derides the taste of liberation and makes it something worthy of completely being rejected. The yogis, the jnanis, and the karmis, they work their entire lives for many, many lives to get their desired result of material sense enjoyment and their desired result of liberation. And the devotee is throwing it away, doesn't want it. As Bilamanga Thakur said in the quote in the last chapter, the mukti lady, because Bilamanga Thakur lived for 500 years in Vrindavan and he was blind. He had given up his eyes because they were standing in the way of his making advancement in devotional service. And Krishna every day, he was blind and he wouldn't beg for food, so Krishna every day would come and give him milk. So he said that the mukti lady is standing there with folded hands saying, "What can I do for you?" And I say, "Go away, there is nothing you can do for me. What need is there for mukti when Krishna is coming each day to bring you milk?" So the happiness or ecstasy that comes from deep Krishna consciousness is so far superior to the happiness that one gets from mukti or liberation, because mukti or liberation, that happiness is basically the cessation of all misery. Just like the person in the prison, he longs to be free, liberated from the prison. That means the fetters or the bondage of prison life is torturous for him, so he wants to become free from that. But the happiness of being outside, the people who are outside of the prison, they don't long to be free, because their happiness is already surpassing that. So similarly, the activities which are centered around Krishna that come to a person who is already free, who is liberated, and engaged in devotional service, is so much higher than liberation. Merging, becoming one. That is kaivalyam narakash seshu. Yes? Nayakayate. That for a devotee, he looks at that liberation as equal to hell. You get him? Good. So a devotee sees that as hellish, becoming one with God. So we can imagine how superior the consciousness of the devotees are. And they're praying, the devotee is praying for millions of years. Two isn't sufficient. Two ears in one mouth isn't sufficient. Because there are so many advanced devotees chanting Krishna's glories all over the world, and they don't want to miss a drop of the nectar coming from the mouths of those devotees. So they need so many ears, because if they only have two ears, they are limited to being in one place. But with thousands of ears and millions of ears, they can put those ears in different parts of the world and hear the glories of Krishna from all those different parts of the world, which is like nectar. And with their millions of tongues, they can speak the glories of Krishna. So this is pleasure, and this pleasure is so much greater than the pleasure of liberation. I want to reject it. The impersonalist desire to merge into the existence of the Supreme, but without keeping their individuality, they have no chance of hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. Because they have no idea of the transcendental form of the Lord, there is no chance of their chanting and hearing of this transcendental activities. They lose their ability to perceive the form of Krishna because they lose their ability to perceive their own individuality. They become one, and they lose their ability to perceive their individuality, and then they lose their ability to hear and chant the glories of Krishna. So for a devotee, kaivalya narakayate. I got it right? Okay. Huh?
You knew it.
No, I didn't know it. I needed you. So just understand the extraordinariness of the devotee's position, this exalted consciousness of a devotee, that they don't long for liberation. They hate the thought of it, because it steals away their ability to hear and chant about Krishna. So how glorious and how sweet that hearing and chanting about Krishna must be for such an exalted devotee who are fixed in mind and attention and fixed in desire to hear. So all these verses, 27 verses, just glorify hearing and chanting and serving Krishna and over impersonal merging with Krishna, becoming one with Krishna. This statement in the Bhagavatam, page 38, this is the first complete paragraph, 6th canto, 11th chapter, verse 25, there's a similar statement by Vritrasura. My dear Lord, by leaving your transcendental service, I may be promoted to the planet called of Dhruvaloka, the pole star, or I may gain lordship over all the planetary systems of the universe. But I do not aspire for this. Just understand. Nor do I wish the mystic perfections of yoga practice, nor do I aspire for spiritual emancipation. All I wish for, my Lord, is your association and transcendental service eternally. This statement is confirmed by Lord Shiva and Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear Sati, persons who are devoted to Narayana, Krishna, are not afraid of anything. Na kutasthana bibhyati. If they are elevated to the higher planetary systems, or if they get liberation from material contamination, or if they are pushed down to the hellish condition of life, or in fact in any situation whatsoever, they are not afraid of anything. Because they have taken shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. For them, any position in the material world is as good as another. Apitoyarta darshana. They don't see. Swagapavoganarakeshu. Apitoyarta darshana. The heaven, hell, liberation, equal. They don't care. They don't see any of these as superior. Because they are fixed in the devotional service of Krishna. And because of that pleasure, everything else is equal or valueless. This Bharat Maharaj, on page 37, look what his position was. He was so much attached to the service of the lotus feet of Krishna that he very easily gave up his lordship over the earthly planet and his affection for his children, society, friends, royal opulence, and beautiful wife. He was so very lucky that the goddess of fortune was pleased to offer him all kinds of material concessions, because the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, gave him so much facility so he could easily perform devotional service. But he just gave them up. But he never accepted any material opulence, because his heart was attracted by the transcendental qualities of Madhusudan. So he doesn't want liberation, material happiness, kingdom over the world, the universe, Brahma's position, Indra's position. So we can examine our own material desires if we are introspective enough. It is difficult, because usually we can see everyone else's problems, but it's very difficult to see our own. Sometimes Krishna kindly, through the devotees or through a circumstance, he will reveal to us. He will hold up the mirror to us, because we think that we are very good looking and very beautiful, and we look in the mirror and then we see what we actually look like. Oh no, is this what I look? We are imagining. That's like sometimes you see these old men, or any young men, old men, they're in the mirror, or the ladies think, in the West you see this all the time. In India too, actually. Like this. They comb their hair and they're looking in the mirror. And then when they finish combing it, it looks exactly the same as before they combed it. Or maybe two hairs are different or something like that. And they're going like this and they're looking, you know. So they're imagining that they're beautiful. And this is our position. We imagine that, oh, I am faultless. And everyone else is wrong. But sometimes Krishna so kindly holds up the real mirror to us. And then we see what's actually in our heart. Like that. So the devotee, so all these material desires that we may have within our heart, and aspirations to become big and powerful and rich and wealthy, they're sitting there in our heart. But these exalted devotees don't actually want these things at all, because they are so satisfied with the positive taste. Param dhistva navate vishaya vinivartante niraharasya deina rasovajam rasopyasya param dhistva navate, because they actually have this higher taste. They are tasting Krishna Katha in such a sweet way that other desires are meaningless. Prahlad Maharaj at the bottom of page 38. So one after another, all these verses are there just to teach us, to push us, to remove these weeds from our heart so that we can aspire for and practice pure devotional service devoid, jnana karma anavrita. My dear friends, Prahlad says, born into atheistic families, if you can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, there's nothing more rare in this world. In other words, if the Supreme Lord Krishna is pleased with you, then any desire you may have within the core of your heart can be fulfilled without any doubt. As such, what is the use of elevating yourself by the results of fruitive activities which are automatically achieved in all events by the modes of material nature? And what is the use of your spiritual emancipation or liberation from material bondage? If you are always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, and always relishing the nectar of his lotus feet of the Lord, then there is no necessity for any of these. These desires only come within the heart of someone who does not have the actual taste for Krishna consciousness. So many quotes. On page 40, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, fourth chapter, 67th verse, the Lord of Vaikuntha replies to Dhruva Maharaj thus, my pure devotees are always satisfied being engaged in devotional service. And therefore they do not even aspire after the five liberated stages, which are to be one with me, to achieve residence on my planet, to have my opulences, to possess bodily features similar to mine, and to gain personal association with me. So when they are not interested even in these liberated positions, you can know how little they care for material opulences or material liberation. So just see the glories of Krishna, serving Krishna. So we should aspire for this position. We should look. We usually, when we see desire come up in our heart, I want that, I need this. We water this desire like it was a valuable plant, but actually it is a weed. We cultivate that material desire, but rather it is a weed that should be pulled out, and we have to understand this. So to help us in this understanding, Rupa Goswami is giving us these verses. Not even liberation, not only not sayuja, but also the other four, samipya, salokya, sarupya, and sharshya. No desire for this. And when a pure devotee accepts these, it is not because he is looking for those opulences. Sometimes someone may even attain entrance in Vaikuntha because he has a desire for these type of opulences. But when a pure devotee accepts these, it is just because he wants to serve Krishna in this way. But for Braja in Vrindavan, the devotees will not even accept these. When I first became a devotee, Rupanuga Prabhu, when I first began to aspire to become a devotee years ago, Rupanuga Prabhu gave us a very advanced instruction right in the beginning. Very simple. He said one day, and actually when we began chanting Hare Krishna, we thought very, very, very soon we would all, the whole world would be Krishna conscious and everything. It will happen, but not as soon as we thought. So Rupanuga told us, one day, after you are performing devotional service for some time, Krishna will come to you, and he will say, and he always used to make this movement with us, I am like this, what do you want? You have purchased me by your devotional service, what do you want? And he said, he trained us, he said, don't ask for anything. He said, this is what he told us to say, I have not been serving you like a businessman. I'm not doing business for you. I don't want anything. What do you want? I'll give you millions of... you want to be Brahma? You want to be the king of everything? You want to be a big, big, big this or a big, big, big that? Hundreds and thousands of years of life, Dhruvaloka, the pole star. What do you like? No, I don't want to do any business with you. I just want to serve you. I'll give you liberation. You can come to my planet. We can always be together on my planet, close associates. You can have unlimited opulence there. No, I'm not serving you out of business. You can look like me, anything you like, you can have. What do you want? You have indebted me so much to you. Actually, our idea is to indebt Krishna more to us. He didn't say that, but that's actually the... No, I don't want anything. I just want to serve you out of love. And Krishna actually then gives himself to his devotee. It is not a calculated plan like that. But this is the nature of the devotee's heart. That he's just interested in loving and serving Krishna and nothing else has value. This is called pure devotion. Free from jnana, karma, anavrita. Anukulena Krishnana shilanam bhakti uttama. This is Krishna consciousness. Janmani janmanishvare bhavat tad bhakti ahaitaki tvaya. I just want to serve you. Even birth after birth after birth, nadaram, najaram, nasundarim. No, I don't want wealth, women, followers, be able to write beautiful slokas, be a famous author. I don't want anything. Janmani janmanishvare. I just want to serve you out of the love in my heart. This is Krishna consciousness. So these verses are all trying to pull out those other desires within our heart. You should ask yourself, okay, what do you want? What do you want? Alright, alright.
What do you want? Let's have it. What do you want? And we're all keeping little secret seeds in there, just waiting till we come a little bigger so we can bring them out. No. We should ask ourselves, what do we want? Will that really make me happy? And then we bring out these slogans. No. I actually don't want these things. Krishna, please remove them. Lord Baladev, O Guru Maharaj, O six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Yaha hoite vijnanas abhista puran. By the mercy, by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, all these obstacles are removed. Sharana vandan. We worship the lotus feet of these exalted personalities. I just tell you one little thing. I'm sorry to do this here. The wives of the Nagapadnis, the wives of Kaliyanag, they say on page 40, Dear Lord, the dust of your lotus feet is very wonderful. Any person who is fortunate enough to achieve this dust does not care for heavenly planets, lordship over all the planetary systems, the mystic perfections of yoga, or even liberation from material existence. In other words, anyone who adores the dust of your lotus feet does not care a fig for these other perfectional stages. So what does that mean? If we have these desires in our heart, what does that mean? Yeah, what else?
That we don't adore Lord.
We have not tasted the dust of his lotus feet. What else?
Offenses.
What else? What else? What should we do if we see ourselves in this light? We are so fortunate to see ourselves in this light. What should we do?
You should pray.
Yeah, with tears in our eyes. If we could do that, if we actually get a glimpse of that, our heart, and if we actually don't like it, and we want this higher thing, our heart will break, and tears will come to our eyes, and we'll beg for the mercy of our Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada, those Swamis, and then we will get so much mercy. So the only problem in getting mercy is our lack of sincerity. This is the problem. He's not the problem, he's not the problem, the heat's not the problem, this isn't the problem, that isn't the problem. The only problem is our insincerity. Page 41. Lord Krishna says in another passage of the Bhagavatam, My dear Uddhava, a person whose consciousness is completely absorbed in my thoughts and activities does not aspire even to occupy the post of Brahma or the post of Indra. Just imagine being so intelligent you can control the entire universe. Lord Brahma embodies the creative potency of the Lord. Just imagine how much fun it will be. You know, there's the people, devotees who would like to program computers and things because it's fun, you know, be able to make things work the way you want, like that, you know, program. There's a feeling, just imagine if you can control the entire universe. But devotees whose consciousness is completely absorbed in my thought and activities does not aspire even to occupy the post of Brahma or the post of Indra. Just think about all those, don't think about all the dancing girls. But Indra, always dancing girls there and everything, whatever you want. The king, you're the king of heaven, someone bothers you, off with his head, send them exile, you can do anything you want, unlimited power, practically speaking. Great, huh? Well, if we have a taste of devotional service, this is insignificant. Mystic powers, lordship over planets, the eight kind of mystic perfections, or even liberation, the devotee has no desire for these things. So how soft and pure the heart of a pure devotee is. What's in there is just bhakti. He's just longing to serve and please Krishna. His heart is so soft. Nothing selfish. Just love of Krishna. Nothing else is the goal for them. Now, because I want to leave time for questions, because we haven't had any time before, I'll just go quickly through the end. On page 44, I'll try anyway. Page 44. Kunti Devi prays to the Lord at the time of his departure. What canto? Kunti Devi's prayers? First canto. What chapter?
Eight.
My dear Krishna, you are so great that you are inconceivable even to the great stalwart scholars and paramhansas. So if such great sages who are transcendental to all the reactions of material existence are unable to know you, then as far as we are concerned, belonging to the less intelligent woman class, how is it possible for us to know your glories? How can we understand you? In this verse, the particular thing to be noted is that the personality of Godhead is not understood by great liberated person, but only by devotees such as Kunti Devi in her humbleness. Although she was a woman and considered less intelligent than a man, still she realized the glories of Krishna. That is the purpose of this verse. So what does it take? There is no material qualification that can help us. It is only this humility and sincerity. In the Atmarama verse, it is stated that even those who are completely liberated from material contamination are attracted by the transcendental qualities of Krishna. The purport of this verse is that a liberated soul has absolutely no desire at all for material enjoyment. He is wholly free from all kinds of material desires. Yet still, he is irresistibly attracted by the desire to hear and understand the pastimes of the Lord, because his heart is basically free from all gross material desires. Otherwise, how could the liberated person known as the Atmaramas be attracted by such pastimes? This is the important point in this verse. And then Prabhupada explains something amazing. Those who are in the four liberated states may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the opulences of Krishna, but at the mature stage, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. So there's in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's the story of the Gop Kumar who goes even up to Vaikuntha and he is not satisfied. He's living in Vaikuntha and he's not satisfied because the only thing that can satisfy him is to regain his eternal sarup or form in relation in service to Krishna. And the last, starting at the end of page 45 to the end, out of many kinds of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the one who is attracted to the original form of the Lord, Krishna in Vrindavan, is considered to be the foremost, first-class devotee. Such a devotee is never attracted to the opulences of Vaikuntha, or even to Dwarka, the royal city where Krishna ruled. The conclusion of Rupa Goswami is that the devotees who are attracted by the pastimes of the Lord in Gokul or Vrindavan are the topmost devotees. A devotee who is attached to a particular form of the Lord does not wish to redirect his devotion to other forms. For example, Hanuman, the devotee of Lord Ramachandra, knew that there is no difference between Lord Ram and Lord Narayan, and yet he still wanted to render service only to Lord Ramachandra. That is due to the specific attraction of a particular devotee. There are many, many forms of the Lord, but Krishna is still the original form. Though all the devotees of the different forms of the Lord are in the same category, still it is said that those who are devotees of Lord Krishna are the topmost in the list of all devotees. And Krishna possesses opulences and sweetnesses that even Lord Narayan does not have. They are numbered in four and they will be described later by Rupa Goswami in the qualities of Lord Krishna. They are stimulations for ecstatic love for the devotees. And the four qualities that Krishna has that even Lord Narayan doesn't have, they are called Rupa Madhurja, Guna Madhurja, Lila Madhurja, and Venu Madhurja. The sweetness of Krishna's Venu, his flute, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, surrounded by his loving devotees in Braja, are incomparable. The sweetness of Krishna's flute is so great that when birds would fly overhead, they would be stunned by the flute. And they would fall to the ground. They couldn't flap their wings, and they would fall to the ground. And the calves would be drinking from their mothers, milk from their mothers, the calves, and they would hear the sound of the flute would enter their ears, and they would stop drinking, and their ears would come up like cups to hold the liquid nectar coming from Krishna's flute. And the gopis would go transcendentally crazy, and they would wish to run out into the forest immediately. And they would criticize, in their transcendental envy, they would criticize the bamboo flute for stealing the nectar of Krishna's lips. So this doesn't happen anywhere else, this type of spontaneous love. And Krishna's form, with peacock feather on his head, playing his flute, dressed not in the great opulence of Vaikuntha, but dressed with garlands, Vaidyantin Shamalam, the five different kinds of flowers, wearing different colored cloth and dancing. His decorations are not gold and jewels as much as forest flowers. And this is Krishna's Rupa Madhurya, the sweetness of his transcendental form with his lotus eyes coming almost to his ears. It's all beautiful, his sweet smile, soft skin, everything. And then guna, qualities, Krishna's transcendental, soft, wonderful qualities, which will be discussed later. There is nothing comparable to Krishna, and therefore there is nothing comparable to Krishna's devotees. Because they are the devotees, although everyone, the devotees of Narayan are in the same category as the devotees of Krishna, but still the devotees of Krishna are considered to be the most fortunate. Even Sri, the goddess of fortune, Tavangri Renu Sparishadikaraha Yadvanchya Sri Lalanet Acharet Tapo Dridhavrataha. That Sri, the goddess of fortune, the Nagnapatis, the wives of the Kali Nag, prayed that I don't know how fortunate this serpent has become. He has attained Tavangri Renu Sparishadikaraha. He has attained the dust, the touch of your lotus feet on his head. And even the goddess of fortune desired this, and she went to the forest, Belvan, to perform austerities with a great vow for hundreds of years, and she could not attain this, and this snake had attained it. So even the goddess of fortune desires to worship Krishna and attain entry into Rasa Lila, but she cannot. Only the residents of Vrindavan are the most fortunate. Their love for Krishna is so great that it actually completely conquers Krishna. So we should remove, we cannot remove, but we should desire, abhor, hate, have dvesh, envy, inimicalness to these other desires in our heart, any other desire other than to serve the lotus feet of C.C. Radha and Krishna and Braja. Because these are obstacles, all these desires are obstacles. So we should be shastrically convinced. And then, evam bhude param bhurva stam stavyapapmanapmana jahi shatram mahabaho kamarupa darasuram, that we should control our lower nature, lower desires, with the higher desires, and be fixed in devotion. Okay. Yes. Now, the test is on, here's what it is. There are four parts. There'll be a few verses, asked Sanskrit, nothing, no surprises. A few verses, Sanskrit, English, and you'll be asked to explain them. Yeah, I think so. I don't have it with me, I can't check. There'll be verses, but nothing that I didn't give you. Then there'll be some Sanskrit words that are in the text, that are in the book. There's some Sanskrit words that are used. You're responsible. I will ask you the Sanskrit. You'll have to tell me the English. Third, you'll have to... There'll be this general philosophy, things that we talked about, what the philosophy is. There'll be questions about the philosophy. But mostly things that we emphasized in class, the things that obviously are mentioned in the book. And the fourth thing is that summary of chapters, because there's a logic to how the chapters are put together. One thing naturally follows the next. We may ask you in a few sentences to describe the content of a chapter or two, or whatever, or all of them, and what are the connections, how do the points connect, how do the chapters connect. Those are the four parts. Sanskrit words, summary of chapters, verses, and general philosophy.
Now, maybe we should,
I don't know if it's really an hour test or longer than an hour test. I think if I remember, it's a bit longer than an hour. I'll think about what to do about that. If you prefer, I don't mind giving you the test before your Bhagavad Gita class. I'll give you a little more time to study. We can give it an hour and a half. What time's the Bhagavad Gita class? 5:30. So we can have it at 4:00 to 6:00.
It has been changed.
Only for one day.
So what time is the class?
4:00 to 6:00.
4:00 to 6:00. So I'll say 5:30. So at 4:00, if you want, we can have this test, and that will give you more time to study. Or we could have it at our regular time. Now, I'll tell you, there's a few things I wanted to tell you, so we'll decide on that in 1 minute. That one year, one devotee whose English wasn't very good, he felt that he was a little bit of a disability, so he thought it was okay that if he brought his own notes to the test and copied them. And then later on, when he got sick, he was in Bhuvaneshwar, and he got sick. He was a European devotee. He got sick, he was very, very sick, and then he wrote me a letter and saying what he did and how bad he felt, and he was so sorry. So please, I shouldn't even have to say this, but after that, I'm saying it anyway. Please, no one cheat, because you cannot cheat Krishna. You can cheat Burijan very easily, I assure you. Krishna will get you all. And the other thing is, that doesn't have anything to do with the test, but something that I've been meaning to tell the devotees. One, in 1969, it was actually 1970 or so, 72, Prabhupada was in Japan, and one of the devotees was sitting like this in Bhagavatam class. And Prabhupada said, don't, he corrected him. So you shouldn't sit like that with your knees up in the air during class. It's considered improper. So there are other ways. He didn't complain about one knee, but both of them up in this position. It's considered improper. So in Bhagavatam class or any of your classes, please don't sit in that fashion. Okay, any questions?
I think we only study one verse as far as I'm concerned. I would like to know if there is more verse to memorize or to...
Huh? I don't remember. But there's nothing. Maybe, I remember two. But did I tell you we wouldn't ask you the second one? Sava upadi vinyamuktam takkarat vena nyamalam.
You said one.
I said anyabhilasutasana. I said that one will definitely be on it with a detailed explanation. I don't know if there's any others. I'll check. I'll let you know tomorrow. Oh, but that leaves us to the next thing. Another question, that on Saturday, would you want that time to study? Or should we...
Study.
Huh? No use starting the next section until we finish the test, because you'll be in too much anxiety.
Yes.
So we'll give you that time to study, and then we can have it on Tuesday at the regular time with no problem. Yeah?
Then if you have any questions, we can then continue during that time.
You could ask me any questions now. Do you have any questions?
If you're studying, we'll come up with
you. I won't be there. Write me a letter. Put it on calm.
You mean there won't be a class on Saturday?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Maybe they have a summary of the whole thing, like a
If you give it, I don't mind. I've been talking so much. I'm tired. You can give it. Why don't you give it, Sammy? You know what we could do on that day? We can break into small groups. Small groups are nice. And then you can study together. Studying together is nice. Anyway, we'll decide that tomorrow. Any other questions? Someone mentioned to me they had philosophical questions and things that we've been studying. Page 37. Second paragraph. Don't lose your individuality. How is... You don't actually lose your individuality because you're eternally a jivatman. It's... That is one of the eternal shaktis of the Lord. Jiva shakti. Maya shakti, jiva shakti, and chit shakti. So the individual can never lose his individuality. But what he does is he can lose his consciousness of his individuality. There's a difference between consciousness, the living entity, and consciousness. The living entity isn't consciousness. His symptom is consciousness. So he loses the consciousness of his individuality by identifying with the Supreme, with Brahman. But if you want to know how, don't try it to find out. That's the situation.
Also, can we make... the question from the previous chapter first.
Yeah, anything.
It was from the previous chapter, how would you know the candidate to devotion service? That was the gradation of three kinds of devotees.
Yes.
Guys. And you said the beginner can elevate himself to the higher stage by associating with pure devotees only. So, what does it mean for us? Do we find pure devotees like associating with pure devotees, how can we elevate our stages?
What?
How can we elevate ourselves?
By keeping in the association of pure devotees. So if you're going to start looking to say, I wonder if he's a pure devotee, and this one over here, I don't know, I saw him in the restaurant or taking extra prasad, I'm not sure about him. No, not like that. But if you see someone has very big material desires, Bhakti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Shanta, if they have desires like that, then we should understand that if we associate with them, we'll catch those desires. This is the meaning. We should associate with the devotees, whether they're mature, immature, or in between, that are sincere devotees. That's the basic idea. Sincerely desiring to serve Krishna. And when we get a chance for more advanced association, we should take it. We should be eager for that.
You have said that by realizing our anarthas, we become humble. So if we understand all our faults but still don't become humble, is that alright to force humility on ourselves, or is that...
How can you force humility?
Yeah, I wanted to know...
You can fake humility.
Is so it, you can explain the difference on false humility and real humility?
It means when you see that you're so full of faults. When you... proud and don't see that and act as if you were, oh, I am the most fallen of all fallen souls. Like one time in Australia, I was sitting with Prabhupada and he was saying, talking about that you should always remain a fool in front of your spiritual master. So I was in a peculiar mood and I said, my only qualification is that I am a fool. And it was completely, it was half joke. but it was really true, but my mood, my consciousness wasn't in any way thinking that. It was false humility. So Prabhupada looked at me and said, yes, but you should not remain a fool. So false humility is, how can it possibly help? It's just a way, oh, I am so humble. It's another way to show that I am great. So it can't help. So why be falsely humble? But that doesn't mean that we should be, I'm not humble, I'm not really humble, so therefore I should act in a horrible way. No, we should be intelligent. Why should I be a hypocrite? I'm not humble and I'm proud, so I should act in a proud way. That's also foolish. Insincere.
When the body sees what is not in our hearts, he feels humble and prays with tears in his eyes. Sometimes there's a question as well, and it feels what happens to reject the process and just, well, what's the point of
feeling? That's why I said when a devotee sees that, because a devotee,
it's like someone said to Prabhupada, why did have so many some big devotees fallen down? And Prabhupada said, big devotees don't fall down. So, if someone is a devotee, how can they leave? How can they leave the lotus feet of Krishna? Even aspiring, that means that man takes the awesome offenses, heavy offenses or something. There's another story that Prabhupada tells about Mahatma Gandhi had a big fight with his wife. And he was yelling at her and yelling at her. And he said, get out of my house! Get out immediately! And he pushed her, out of the door, and he slammed the door. He was so angry at her. And then after 5 minutes, there was... Who is it? Who is at the door? It's you! I kicked you out. Why are you here again? Why I told you to go away. Why didn't you go away? She looked at him and said, I have nowhere to go. That is the position of the Lord. Where are you going to go? When you think that you have somewhere to go, that is the goal of Maya. No matter how hard it is, if you have nowhere to go, you have nowhere to go. There's no alternative. There is no alternative. Where will you go? What will you be after hearing this philosophy, after tasting a little bit? Where will you go? Go live with your mother? No, you cannot do that.
Find yourself caught between the tears.
That's why you cry. That's why the tears come to that. I don't have the capacity to go forward, and I have nowhere to go, so I'm dependent upon you. I need some mercy. And then you always, always, always will get mercy in that way. That's why he cried. Hopeless. One only cries when he feels like he's hopeless. Helpless, hopeless. I'm trying by my own efforts for so long, and I've gotten nowhere. And you've revealed this to me today, what my heart looks like. And I have nowhere to go. I am dependent. So what did Mahatma Gandhi do when his wife said that? Of course, he invited her to come back in. So when we are like that, we should examine, where do I think I can go that can make us happy? Where? Examine. Doing what? In what place? With whom? Don't be afraid to examine. Don't be brainwashed, mindless zombie. Be here because you want to advance.
Why didn't the Lord set up Krishna in the fight and say something about it?
Where did he come from? Where did he come from? Where did he come from? Sisupal. He came from Krishna or Vaikuntha?
Vaikuntha.
He was Jayavijay, one of them. I don't know which one. Right? So he was an individual, and he went in, and then what? And he took a next birth again. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. As he was Jagai Madai, one of those two. We also don't know which one he was. So he, just like the green parrot goes into the green tree, so it may look like he's merged into the tree, because we cannot differentiate, but he actually hasn't lost his individuality. So he was an individual. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. This individuality is eternal. It cannot be lost. And he ended up where? After three births as a demon, he ended up again in Vaikuntha as the doorkeeper. So how, if he merged, he would have lost his position. He would have become everything.
According to the example of Great Hare and his father, merges into the Great Hare.
That's a Mayavadi example. We don't use Mayavadi examples.
So there is a Brahmajyoti which is coming from Krishna.
But we use the example that Prabhupada used as the aquatics in the river. Although the material merges and loses its form of the body and the subtle body, but that means like the water becomes one with the seawater, but the living entities who are in the water, and that is us, we are the living entities, we are not the water. So we don't merge. You can use so many Mayavadi examples. You can say that the cup of water is poured into the ocean, and then it becomes one with the ocean. So, but we don't like the Mayavadis. We don't want to follow them. We cannot become one. We are individuals eternally. That is the meaning of Jiva Shakti. Part and parcel of Krishna. Not only part, but parcel. Parcel means a unit. You have to, when you were doing life membership, did you have to preach a lot about this kind of thing?
Yeah, in India, I subscribe. 95%
population is Mayavadi. No. 95% of the population is confused. That's all they've heard is Mayavad philosophy. So they think, yes. So the devotees in the early days on Sankirtan, when they'd be out book distributing or something, they'd say, take this book. And then the person said, everything is one. And then the devotee would say, okay, that means you are me. I am you, so give me all your money. No problem, everything is one. Then suddenly there will be two. When you ask them for their money, there will be two. Right, isn't it? Those same people were very long, they don't want to give you their money, then why? Why, if everything is one? The glove, but that's a different, why bringing up gloves if we're talking everything is one? Suddenly it's gloves now. Nonsense. There's a lot. You have heard in Brajabihari Prabhu's class, there's the topic switching. Have you learned about topic switching yet? You're talking about give me your money, they will change the topic to gloves all of a sudden. So what is the question? If the glove, if everything is one, why doesn't the one fit into any glove? But there are different hands. The example is our example. The hand is different. And although the hand may be one in one sense, but the fingers are all different. Anyway, it's not a practical philosophy. If everything is one, there's one story in the early days, the real, in the 60s. If everything, if we are one, what was it? Then the devotee said, take off your shirt. If everything is one, what's the difference? So he took off his shirt. He wanted to prove that he was so philosophical. He took off his shirt, he took off his pants, he was standing in the street. But anyway, it'll be easier to get someone to take off their shirt than to give you their money. That is for sure. Okay, last question.
Well, my question is, and as you probably mentioned in the argument, the person saying that we are all equal, how can we run around and say that one person has to be dead? But how too many days you ask him again? You can say that does not matter for me. Anyway, my question is that you said, when you just mentioned about that theory, he is a homosexual, but she wasn't successful. But we heard that the Sufis, they were homosexual and they got actually.
Because there's a reason why Lakshmi Devi wasn't successful.
Yeah, what's the reason?
I'm not going to tell you. There's a specific reason. She had an attachment. Now, she did not want to give up her exalted opulent position to take birth in the womb of a Braja Gopi. You have to do that. Only by taking birth in that way. This is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti in the 10th canto somewhere. Okay, Hare Krishna. Tomorrow, I don't think we'll have more time for questions. When you do your thinking, speaking, when you do your class, you should have a lot of Mayavadi arguments and have fun like that. They're good. You can try everything that they've put. Everything they've tried on you, you bring out and let the devotees play with it.